Today at Radio Verulam, we're once again speaking to one of your local MPs to get the answers to your questions. And thank you this month from everybody here at Radio Verulam. This has been the record month for questions, involvements with the political broadcast. Thank you so much, and please do keep those questions coming in. I know some people will be disappointed that they didn't have their questions answered this month, but we talk to our politicians every month, so there's a chance when they're back again next month, if your questions are relevant, they will be asked then. But without further ado, let's go in to the Q&A session. So welcome back to the show, Daisy. We took a break last month in line with parliamentary recess, but the work goes on, doesn't it? Was it just as busy as always for you during this time?
Well, actually, the summer recess did calm down a little bit. I think a lot of people managed to get away, managed to get some time away from work and with kids and things. So things have calmed down a little bit. But obviously, Parliament reconvened a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, we reconvened with a bit of a bump because in August, of course, you know, normally August is known as the silly season, where the newspapers publish lots of silly stories about, you know, made up things, you know, whether legislation is going to restrict the size of tomatoes or something daft like that. But of course, this year it was incredibly serious because we had the issues in Afghanistan and Parliament was reconvened for the emergency debate. And that debate has not finished.
Yeah, well, that's something that we're going to get onto a little bit later, because I'm sure in the area people can get involved and help Afghanistan refugees. But we'll start off with a lighter subject, because one of the funniest things discussed this month, I'm sure it was the talk of the town in terms of the political sphere, was you were asked the Queen's favourite Star Wars character. You weren't sure, but the important issue is, who is your favourite Star Wars character?
My favourite character is Chewbacca. I should probably say something like, because if that's a feminist, I should probably say Princess Leia or Rey or something like that. But I do love Chewbacca. I love a big cuddly bear.
I mean, he is absolutely great. And in terms of it, just for people understanding, it was a brilliant question from one of the pupils that you visited this month. But let's move it to the Liberal Democrats. It's been the conference this month. Was it great to be able to talk and discuss with fellow party members?
A conference is always really good for the soul. You join with other people who share your values, and then we have big old arguments about what our policies should be, and we debate those and we vote on them, and it's a healthy sign of a party that values internal democracy. Our conference was virtual again this year. The other parties are having physical conferences, but ours was a virtual conference, and I think what we've learned for the second or third time now is that that's actually a really good way of involving people who wouldn't ordinarily be able to get involved, either because they can't afford to go to conference or because they're still very nervous about COVID or they're clinically extremely vulnerable. Every party conference finishes with a leader's speech, and we did manage to have Ed Davies' leader's speech in person. So we managed to do our lateral flow test and then cram ourselves into a room for that. And I was delighted it got such good coverage, you know, on the 6 and 10 o'clock news on the BBC. But it was great to talk about our, you know, our emerging ideas on education and carers and small business. It was a really good event.
Well, talking about that, the fact that it wasn't all in person, that some of it was, over the internet and things like that. Do you think that maybe the Liberal Democrats are leading by example, that this is how politics should be going forward, to be as inclusive as possible?
Well, I've always believed that politics should be as inclusive as possible. And I think what I hope we'll see in my party is that our conferences in future will be a hybrid version, because nothing beats meeting people face to face. Nothing beats having those kind of conversations and, you know, picking up information by the water cooler or in the conference bar or whatever it might be. But for a lot of people, you know, conferences are a slightly alien concept. They're very expensive to pay to go to a conference for 2 or 3 days, you know, by the seaside without taking out time from your own holiday. So I do think that that even though it's really good to have conferences in person, and I hope that we can get back to in-person conferences soon, I hope that we retain a virtual element to make it more inclusive.
Well, the message of your speech as well was, we need people like you. I guess that kind of encapsulates the spirit that you want everybody to be involved. And at the conference, you gave this speech. In it, you stated that this deeply illiberal nationalist Tory government is waging an attack on our liberties and on our freedoms, and on our global reputation. I do have to ask, Daisy, and this is something that has been talked about in the media and lots of circles. Do you believe that this is the most dangerous erosion in civil liberties for many generations?
Well, I mean, I got involved in politics in 2008 because I was really alarmed that the Labour government at the time was eroding our civil liberties. You know, they were proposing ideas of, you know, suspicionless stop and search, you know, and 42 days detention without trial, things were deeply illiberal and deeply ineffective. And now we have attacks on our political freedoms by this Conservative government. So if you look at some of the legislation they've been bringing in, they're trying to restrict our rights to protest. Some of the legislation that the government has proposed would actually stop people protesting, even if they're on their own, making a little bit of noise. I mean, the whole purpose of having a protest is that you're supposed to make noise. So the idea that you can arrest somebody for making some noise really fundamentally undermines the right to protest. The government is also trying to reduce what's called judicial review. Now, this is a process by which any individual who has been failed by the government can take the government of the day to court, you know, and that's been done by disabled people who, where the government hasn't fulfilled their duties to disabled people. Soldiers have taken the government to court when they've been sent to fight in wars without the proper equipment. You know, it's a really important human right. It's a really important political right for any individual to take the government to court. And this government is trying to erode that. And as well, they're trying to push through changes to our voting system so that for lots of different elections, they are proposing a sort of winner-takes-all, first-past-the-post system and removing what I would see as a fairer voting system. So I think when you add up all of these different measures that they're trying to take, it does to me seem as though this government is really attacking our political rights and freedoms, and it's incredibly dangerous and very worrying.
And in terms of that then, what would you advise people to do going forward? You've mentioned protesting. If people do believe that message that their rights are being eroded, how can they go out there?
Well, quite frankly, I would always encourage people to get involved in politics. That's how you do. If you don't like what the government of the day is doing, or you don't like what the opposition is saying, you can get involved in politics. That's the way to do it.
So in Parliament, you have been fighting for no rise in national insurance. You said the social care crisis needs to be fixed, but this isn't a fair way of doing it. What do you believe would be a fairer system?
Well, at the last two general elections, my party, the Lib Dems, we put forward our ideas on how we would solve the health and social care crisis. We were honest about the fact that that would involve tax rises, and we set out a very fair way of doing that. Our proposals in those two general elections were looking at raising income tax, and that's a fairer tax, a fairer way of doing things. The rise in national insurance is incredibly problematic. First of all, it's incredibly unfair. It's incredibly unjust. And if you, Liberal Democrats have just revealed today that if you look at nurses and care home staff and other health and care staff, they're going to be paying £900 million more in tax as a result of this national insurance rise. So it's going to hit the lowest income, those on the lowest incomes, as well as our sort of health and social care heroes. So it's a very unfair way of doing it. And it comes at a time when the government is also cutting universal credit by £20 a week. And we're seeing energy and food bills rising. So it's a triple whammy of this national insurance rise, the universal cuts and the energy and all the household bills are going through the roof, that is going to cause a perfect storm and plunge a lot more people into very severe poverty.
Talking of people in terrible situations here, and maybe humbling for a lot of us as well, we have to turn the attention to what you mentioned at the start, the Afghanistan refugee crisis. You called for resettlement in St. Albans. What provisions have been made so far, and what can local residents do to help?
Well, St. Albans District Council was very quick off the mark in supporting the resettlement of Syrian refugees, and they're very keen once again to support the settlement of Afghanistan refugees as well. The major problem we have is that the government so far has only offered a 12-month funding package. Now, if you think about people coming from, fleeing Taliban rule, these are people who are often very traumatised. They're running scared for their lives. They they need to settle in a new country where they don't know how to do basic things like, you know, sort out the bins or find a builder or contact a landlord, or all these things are very complicated and they take longer. I mean, we know from experience that it takes longer than 12 months to settle refugees in a country. So I was calling on the government to pledge a 5-year funding deal. And this would provide local councils with the money not only to support refugees to be settled in private accommodation, but also to provide the funding for the council, so the council can be a point of contact for these people, for all of their very many queries and concerns that they have. So we can signpost them to things like how to apply for jobs, how to contact a GP, all those kind of day-to-day questions that people will have for a number of years.
So with that situation as well, is there people things that people can do at a local level as well? I think I have seen in Facebook groups, Twitter groups and discussions around St Albans of maybe some local charities that might be collecting soups or clothes or things like that. Can you point to maybe specific ones that people can go to?
So people at these times, residents of St Albans are incredibly generous and a lot of people have been wanting to help. The really critical issue is making sure that we can get the right items to the right people. And there are many things that people are willing to give but may not actually be appropriate, or there might be things that people don't need. So what I would say is Hertfordshire County Council has been coordinating these efforts. They're working very closely with local charities. And until Hertfordshire County Council says this is what we need and this is when we need it and this is where we need it to go, I would encourage people to just hold back a little bit. A lot of people have already given lots of money and food and clothes donations, and I think that many of the local charities have been really overwhelmed. So as and when charities need those extra bits of help, I'm sure they will call for it, but we're making sure that we try and coordinate it at top level so we get the right kind of items to the right kind of people.
So keep an eye on the official routes then. Hertfordshire County Council is probably the best bet to keep an eye on, maybe their website, I guess, or some sort of newsletter. But let's move it to the community questions. And before we get into them, I just have to say that there's been a huge response this month. I don't know if absence has made the heart grow fonder of these political interviews, but there's been so many questions this month. We've been bombarded with a record number for all of you. So just thank you for your time again, Daisy, for coming on and fielding all these, because there's so much. Now, for fairness, I actually wanted to put one of the questions that was sent to Bambos to you, and I'll be asking Bim as well, so if people are interested in the answer to this question. But Chris wanted to know, what newspaper or news outlet do you read at the moment, Daisy, and that you think is the best? Because he feels that a lot of newsprint is too sensationalist and leaning far too far to the right. Is there any good centre/left products?
Yeah, good question. Well, I mean, there's a distinction, isn't there, between broadcast and newspapers. Broadcasters generally tend to be more impartial because they are regulated by Ofcom, and therefore they're required to be more impartial. I have to say, I quite like the fact that Channel 4 is generally more outspoken than the BBC. So I think if you're looking for a sort of centre or sort of centre-left take on things within the impartiality rules, then Channel 4 is always a good bet for broadcast. I think in terms of newspapers, I mean, let's be honest, all newspapers, whether they're left or right, have a tendency to be a little bit sensationalist. And that's because, A, they're unregulated, and B, because they're trying to make money. And so in order to get people to buy their products, they're trying to be a bit more sort of clickbaity. I think the Financial Times is a pretty good read, not just on actual financial issues, but on a lot of other issues as well. I think they're fairly balanced. But from a personal point of view, I actually think it's really important to read across the spectrum. You know, I mean, I tend to read The Times, The Telegraph, The Guardian, The FT. I keep an eye on all of them because they have a different perspective on different things. And one of the things that I think you know about me, because I've mentioned it before, is that I think as a country, we've lost the ability to debate well. We've lost the ability to agree, to disagree agreeably. And part of the way we can do that is by trying to get our news from lots of different places to see other people's points of view.
And it's very interesting because Bambos said almost exactly the same thing. So it'll be interested to see if Bim agrees with the two of you in terms of discussing, having a fair insight into what he called the opponent's point of view. So it'll be interesting that. Watch this space. I'm sure you might listen as well, Daisy, just to see what the perspective is there. But we'll move on to a lot of the questions about St. Albans area and things like that. Sharon actually had the most popular question. We had lots of emails in, but on Facebook as well, her question was the most liked, and it's about traffic in St. Albans. She's described it as getting progressively worse over the years. King Harry Lane, King Will Junction, St. Peter Street, Harpenden Junctions, etc. The roads all need new action plans to ensure traffic flows. She has asked, can you promise a review of citywide traffic / transport plan?
Well, first of all, I mean, I sympathise with Sharon. You know, we do have a lot of cars. We have far too many cars, if I'm honest, in and around St Albans, and that's part of the problem. If we had a government that would invest more in public transport, then we could get out of our cars and into buses and shared transport like that. But we're not there yet. I'm afraid I'm not in any kind of position to promise that kind of review, because highways is a county council issue. Hertfordshire County Council is responsible for highways. And I think part of the problem we have is that Hertfordshire County Council is not always very good at communicating either to the district council or to me or to local residents about what's going on. And I've actually just come off a phone call with National Highways, because National Highways has just been granted permission to start doing some works on the Park Street roundabout, including at weekends, whilst the Hertfordshire County Council has also given, as we know, Affinity Water the approval to do works on the Red Bull Road, which looks like we're potentially facing a situation over the coming weeks where we've got two major trunk roads in St Albans having repair works over the weekend, and these things are just not joined up. So I will be writing to Hertfordshire County Council about it, and I would encourage Sharon and everybody else who has concerns about this issue to write to their county councillors, because they're the right people to take this up with the county council, because that's the highways authority.
Chris has continued the discussion about transport. He's asked, when is the High Street going to reopen to relieve the congestion on Folly Lane and Catherine Street?
So, again, this was a decision of Hertfordshire County Council to close the High Street, because obviously with the pandemic, it was seen as a way of enabling more people to go and support our local shops and our local hospitality businesses, whilst having enough space to socially distance in that area, in the main town centre or city centre. There has since been a consultation on whether it should remain closed or whether it should reopen. My understanding is that I think the overwhelming majority of people wanted it to remain closed, because people on the whole like the pedestrianisation. I know not everybody does. Some people have found it to be a problem. But my understanding is that the County Council is looking to keep it closed, I think, because of the response of the public consultation, which was overwhelmingly in favour. And I do recognise that it does cause slightly more congestion, I think, but ultimately it does create a nicer environment in our city centre. And we know from research across the country that where you have pedestrianised areas, people tend to, they're more likely to walk into town in the first place. They tend to spend more time in our high streets, and they tend to spend more money as well. And given the challenges that many of our hospitality and retail businesses are facing, I actually think it's really important that we can get more people into town to spend their money supporting our local businesses, rather than sitting at home clicking on Amazon, which we're all guilty of, but we all need to do a lot less of.
Well, it'll be interesting then, I guess, if Chris is opposed to continuing it as pedestrianised. Once again, we would advise, or you would advise, to contact the County Council, make your voice heard. Barry has asked, what does Daisy think her impact has been locally and what achievements she is proud of? There's a second question, but we'll just focus on this first one for the moment.
Oh, well, goodness me, I could wax lyrical about this for as long as you like. I mean, a huge part of my job is helping individuals, right? And these are things that I can't talk about publicly because they're private confidential matters. But I've helped loads of residents with housing cases, sorting out visas, sorting out, there's been huge queues and delays at the DVLA, sorting that out. All sorts of local businesses have been applying for government grants or local grants and had problems with their banks. We've sorted out loads of those kind of things. So in terms of having an impact locally, those are some of the examples of the kind of things I've done locally to help individual people and individual businesses. I do put out an annual report that sort of outlines some of the things that I've been doing. You know, I've asked absolutely loads of questions to support our hospitality businesses in Parliament, where the government put out guidance that didn't make sense and there were gaps in it, and many of our local businesses didn't know what they could and couldn't do during the pandemic. And as a result of my questions, we got clarity on various bits of guidance, which enabled us to support businesses to reopen. One of the things that I've talked about, which I've put in a report that went around to every house earlier this year, was at the start of the pandemic when there was a problem with the oxygen at Watford Hospital, and the Department of Health and Social Care had cancelled the repair works. And I basically spent a few hours trying to get to Matt Hancock and managed to get a phone call with him, demanding that engineers were sent first thing on Monday morning to fix the oxygen tanks. And that's happened, and that was great. So I guess there's loads of things locally I've done to help individuals and businesses and support hospitality and retail in particular.
Barry asked a follow-up question. Also, what does Daisy believe is the does she have any influence as an MP in a minority party?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I'm asked this quite a lot as it happens. I mean, the fact is that the Conservative government has got an 80-seat majority, and therefore, when it comes to votes on legislation, they can push through pretty much anything they like, and, you know, it would take a huge rebellion to try and stop certain things. That said, the government also comes up with policies that doesn't require legislation, and there are opportunities to influence that. So I can give you just sort of two or three examples. The first was the 10 p.m. curfew. You know, remember during the pandemic, the government said everyone had to be kicked out of pubs and restaurants at 10 p.m. That was incredibly bad for public health because we saw huge groups of people piling into city centres and dancing and going onto public transport. It was also really bad for business. And as a result of my questions, I managed to expose the fact the government hadn't done any business analysis. I worked with hospitality businesses up and down the UK to launch an SOS campaign, and we persuaded the government to change their policy on that. Likewise, with the issue about care in care homes. Under the first pandemic, the government didn't put enough protection around care homes. And then under the second pandemic, they went too far the other way and didn't allow family carers to go and see people in care homes. We got that policy changed as well. And if you look at most recently, our win in Chesham and Amersham in the parliamentary by-election, that win has helped us to force the government to put its very undemocratic planning proposals on the shelf and to rethink them, because what the government was proposing was to completely rip up the right of communities to have a say on what kind of building should be taking place in their community. So I think there's two or three pretty large policies I could point to where I say, you know, yes, okay, we can't always win votes on legislation, but in terms of changing the government's mind and forcing them into U-turns, I think we've done a pretty good job.
Mike wants something to be done in the local area, though. He says, please can you ask Daisy to keep the pressure on the Department for Transport and Thames Link to offer peak time Carnet tickets, because the inflexible season ticket just does not work for so many commuters. In fact, the whole aspect of ticketing is a minefield to make sure that you have the best value. He's also said, the lift call buttons at the station are still the wrong way round. Daisy will know what I mean.
I do know what he means, yeah, sure. I mean, yes, I will keep up the pressure for sure. I think what's really frustrating is the government has launched this new flexi ticket, which is less flexible than it was before. And for people who commute in at peak times and then commute back in non-peak times, it's actually more expensive, and these carnets are no longer available in one direction. So, Mike's absolutely right, and I've already written to the Department for Transport to complain about this and ask them to put their plans on hold. They refused. So I will continue to lobby my neighbour in Welwyn Hatfield, the Transport Secretary of State, to look at this issue again. But I do think it's a slightly sort of bizarre situation where you have a government launching a flexible ticket scheme and it actually becomes less flexible and more expensive. So I sympathise with Mike as a commuter myself, and yeah, I'll pick it up, and I'll also contact Thames Link about the lift call buttons. I had contacted them before, but I will chase them up.
To get them the right way round. In terms of it, Jan has asked, would it be possible at all to have speed bumps put along the Ridgeway from petrol station going down before there is a serious accident? The speed some drivers go down there is well over 30 miles per hour.
Yeah, I'm really sympathetic to Jan. I mean, we've got this problem in all sorts of parts of the constituency. It's the case on the Ridgeway, but also down in Chiswell Green and also Watling Street in Park Street, Mount Pleasant Lane. There's a number of roads where people go really, really fast and use them sometimes as racetracks, effectively. Again, highways is a county council issue, so I would really encourage Jan to write to her local county councillor, who's John Hale, because he'll be the right person to take that forward.
And Jill has kind of reflected that with her question, but in terms of speed cameras, is there any reason why the Hertfordshire County Council is specifically opposing them?
I have no idea. but if Jill wants to send me an email, I don't know whether Hertfordshire County Council has opposed them, and they may well have done. But if Jill wants to send me an email, I can contact the County Council and find out.
So Jean has asked, do you plan to action a proper review of the market stall changes with regard to the use of council-erected stalls or trader-erected gazebos?
Ah, well, this is a district council matter. District council is responsible for the market. I have to say, I've been really perplexed by some of the stuff going on social media. Fundamentally, I absolutely love our charter market. I'm really proud of it. And I think it's a real shame that some people are always sort of trying to talk it down. The district council administration fought to protect the market during the pandemic. And I know this myself because, you know, I received a number of emails from people who were so scared they wanted the market to be closed down. They didn't think it was safe. And in fact, we got permission and support from the Public Health Director to keep the market open during the pandemic to provide a COVID secure environment for people to do their shop of fresh fruit and veg. So we fought very hard to keep the market open and to make sure that it could be done in a COVID secure way with social distancing and markers and all the rest of it. The district council, you know, this has suddenly become an issue where there are strong views on it. The district council has set up a cross-party working group. The cross-party working group is going to have a meeting. That meeting is going to be in public. Ordinarily, these kind of working groups meet in private. That's what normally happens. That's the standard approach. But the administration at the council said they want it to be done in public so everybody can hear for themselves what's going on. So they're being transparent about it. They're being open about it. They're going to consider the pros and cons of the different ways of having erected stalls or gazebos. It's for the councillors to figure this out, and people can have their say and they'll be heard. But fundamentally, you know, we've managed to protect the market. We've managed to attract more stall holders. You know, there are stall holders queuing up to have their first go on the market in St Albans. And I think people really ought to take pride in it and stop talking it down, quite frankly.
Well, it'll be an interesting one. And if Sejan has any points of view on that, again, like you've said there, there's a very open discussion about it with the council. Nishta has asked, how will Daisy and her party help restore the NHS as a publicly funded, publicly delivered and publicly accountable integrated healthcare system?
Yeah, that's a big question. there's a long debate to be had about that. I mean, in short, the NHS needs staff and it needs money, right? And at the last general election, in fact, for a couple of general elections, Liberal Democrats had pledged to increase, to raise 1p in the pound and ring fence that money. I think it came to about 7 billion, I need to double check, but I think about that. Have 1p in the pound that we would ring fence to support NHS and social care. And it's really important that we include the two together because we have a social care crisis just as we have a crisis in our healthcare sector as well. There are issues around procurement. I know that, you know, the NHS has often been forced to always offer up certain things for procurement and competition, and I think those rules might be changing to some degree. But we also need to get the staff in, and, you know, one of the problems we've had with Brexit and COVID combined, but it clearly started with Brexit and has been made worse by COVID, is that a number of health and care staff that came from European countries have gone home or moved to other European countries because they either get paid more and they feel more welcome, have more opportunities there. And as a result, we have a real problem with a real sort of workforce crisis. So we do need to raise more money. Say we had set out our plan in the general elections to how we're going to do that. We'll set out our plan, if it's the same or if it's different, for any future general election. But we're absolutely committed to raising more money and putting in a workforce strategy to make sure that we can protect the NHS.
So the final question for this month, Peter has asked, I'll be interested on Daisy's views of encouraging tourism into the city with the subsequent spend such tourists bring into our retail and hospitality, park and ride schemes, motorhome air style parking, same as on the continent. And some other people have mentioned, you know, Oxford as a place that has this style. It seems to be one of the most growing kind of styles for staycations in the UK. Would you be for that, Daisy?
So I'm definitely in favour of bringing in more tourism into the city. And I think just before the pandemic, it was fantastic that the District Council actually launched a TV advert about bringing people to St Albans and showcasing what we have to offer. You know, not only do we have our wonderful market, but we have these beautiful shops. We've got the Abbey. We've got so much going for us. And of course, our wonderful pubs. So I'm definitely in favour of bringing in more tourism into the city. I do think we have to be mindful of the climate emergency. We have got to get people onto public transport and away from cars on the roads. We need to have a reliable train service so people feel confident they can come to St Albans and know the train is running. I want to see the Abbey line dualled so people feel able to use the Abbey line to come to St Albans. And I know there are plans afoot for potentially an east-west rapid transport system in Hertfordshire, and that's got my wholehearted backing as well, because that would get people into St Albans to spend their money to support our local economy, but without bringing all the transport with it.
Well, there you go. So I hope that people have enjoyed the questions that have been answered and found it useful. As stated, just before we went into the community questions, we had a record number. So apologies if they weren't answered this month. We'll put quite a few of them into next month's if they are, you know, evergreen and will last until then. But as always, Daisy, thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.